This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today, and what a challenging world we're living in. I'm Thomas Arete. Thanks for your company. Coming up this Tuesday, if it's not the economic Armageddon of our times, then it'll do until the real one shows up. Predictions of unemployment rates tipping up to 20%, industries shutting down, and governments racking up astronomical debts. The coronavirus, not just a health crisis, but a social and economic one too. And what signs you should be looking for if you're worried you've contracted the virus?
The three cardinal symptoms we've been told to recognise are obviously fever, cough and runny nose. But as experience has increased, we're being increasingly aware that there are a lot of patients that don't fit those three cardinal symptoms.
First, there are disturbing scenes across the country this lunchtime as thousands more queue for unemployment benefits. Let's head straight to our business reporter, David Taylor. He's outside a Centrelink office in Darlinghurst in inner Sydney and joins me live now. David, good afternoon. A sombre mood there, I'd imagine. Tell me what you're seeing.
Oh, good afternoon, Tom. Yeah, you can probably hear it in my voice. It's quite shocking to watch, actually. Made our way down here, and the streets were... It was pretty easy to get through the streets because there's hardly anyone around. Turned a corner onto what is Crown Street, the corner of Crown Street and Liverpool Street here in Sydney, and I was just confronted by this enormous line of people. There's every type of person here. I'm just looking up the queue right now, and it's dead silent. No one's saying a thing. There are a couple of people whispering to one another, but there are looks of fear on people's faces, anxiety. And I've been watching this chap. He's about four from the back of the queue now because there's a security guard making sure there's no panic or anything like that going into the Centrelink shop itself. But there's a chap four back, and he's wearing a blue T-shirt, and he hasn't moved since I've been here. And that's well over an hour. And he's just on his phone, showing some signs of anxiety. But there's a lot of twitching going on, people worried. But frankly, like I say, I've been here for an hour, but the line basically hasn't moved. So I just don't know when these people are going to get, if they're going to get what they came for.
Yeah, and David, I mean, the people in the queue, lots of them, I imagine, never dreamed of having to turn up to Centrelink.
No, not at all. And like I said before, there's every type of person here. The fact is that 3 weeks ago, economists were saying that the unemployment rate might go up to 6%, might go up to 7%. All that stuff's out the window now. I mean, if this keeps up, I suspect this queue will be here again tomorrow and then the next day, and it'll go around the corner, and the unemployment rate could sort of rise to sort of 15, 20. Well, we don't know. Well, I shouldn't even say that. We just don't know what's going to happen. And that kind of uncertainty I can see on the face of every single person, Tom, waiting in this queue.
Business reporter David Taylor outside of Centrelink in inner Sydney there. What we've seen so far in this extraordinary week, the job losses are indiscriminate. As David said, there's a lot of uncertainty, but some economists are predicting employment rates could reach 20%. And as the crisis unfolds, Eleni Soltis has been talking to some of the people affected.
It's one thing losing a job at the best of times, but marketing manager Lissa Tredgett has learned far too quickly what it means to lose a job amidst a pandemic and resulting economic crisis.
I was made redundant from my workplace on Friday, and then following the governmental announcements of licensed premises being closed, my pub chef husband lost his job on Monday. It's been incredibly gut-wrenching, and all the while we continue to parent children and have to act like everything's okay for them.
It's anything but okay. Lissa Tredgett's employers made no assurances she will be rehired.
I spent Friday calling daycares, preparing them for me not paying my bills and pulling my kids out. I called my real estate and prepared them for not being able to pay my rent. It's been pretty bleak. The mindset of the money that we have now, so we'll both have one more paycheck come in following, is like a hoarder's mindset. When will I see a next paycheck? I've submitted my claim for job seekers. My husband is in the process of applying, but the website's so overloaded that you get kicked off. So to be perfectly honest, my rent is due on Friday and I can't pay it.
And she is not alone.
Today is my final day of work.
Sam Crothers worked in student services at a large university in Sydney. He was dealing with international students, mostly from China. That work has all dried up now, and he's been stood down with 10 days' pay for the unforeseeable future.
I feel pretty powerless. I guess your job makes up a big part of your sense of self, and to lose it is a bit of a hit. I'm kind of worried about what I'm going to do every day and how I'm going to stay motivated.
What work could you search for?
I don't know, really. I don't know where else I could fit in. I was thinking that I'd get a job at a cafe or a pub, but looks like that's not going to happen either. I've been sitting here at my desk all morning trying to get the Centrelink webpage to work. It doesn't.
And have you seen the queues?
Yeah, I've heard about the queues. I've had friends waiting in queues for hours, sending live updates. It's something that I'd prefer to avoid if possible just because of social distancing, but if I have no other option, I have no other option. I'll have to stand in line.
And standing in that very long line is something personal trainer Nikki Thompson wants to avoid. She's technically self-employed at the gym. That's now in shutdown.
Well, financially, it's going to be a big strain because I've got to pay, still got to pay all my bills and things like that, but then I have no money coming in. So it is a bit of pressure at the moment to try to find either an alternate job or, just trying to work something else out.
Will you be needing to contact Centrelink soon?
Yes, so that's pretty much one of my things to do today. But, you know, I've got friends who, you look at other people who've got, you know, restaurants and cafes and things like that, you know, even they're all affected. So it has hit a lot of people, and especially those who own small businesses. I think they're going to be affected the most.
Personal trainer Nikki Thompson, Eleni Soltis reporting. So economists are now trying to forecast just how grim the unemployment rate could get. We've heard some pretty shocking predictions. The ABC senior business correspondent Peter Ryan joins me now with more. Peter, afternoon. Look, we've heard about those long queues outside Centrelink offices from David a moment ago. Are those predictions about the unemployment rate realistic?
Well, Tom, as we've been hearing in some of those distressing stories just then, clearly this is a major shock. After 29 years without a recession now, a standard recession would be a good case scenario. Economists are still working on their forecast given the rapidly developing lockdown in Australia and the impact of that, and more people being laid off and made redundant every day. But certainly a dramatic rise from the current 5.1% jobless rate is a given. Stephen Halmarik, head of global economics at the Commonwealth Bank, doesn't have an official forecast just yet, but he thinks a double-digit unemployment rate seems highly likely.
It's very hard to put a figure on it. In the past, the unemployment rate, when it has risen, it happens more slowly. This time around, it's a dramatic and very rapid effect. The good news is that the government has stepped in ahead of that, so we know that people are eligible for government support.
Given the unknowns about the spread of the coronavirus, could Australia move from having a recession into something more serious like a depression?
I think putting recession, depression labels on what's happening is probably not that helpful. But I think if we look at the toll that it's going to take on the economy, then that's certainly going to have a real impact on people's lives and the economy.
The last week in particular has been quite distressing for many. Did you think you'd ever see anything like this in Australia?
So I've been working as a financial market economist for 35 years, including through the last recession and back in the early 90s. But I have to say this is probably the most difficult period I've seen in my career.
Stephen Halmarik at the Commonwealth Bank. He was speaking to our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. On ABC Radio, across Australia, streaming online and on the ABC Listen app, this is The World Today. Thanks for joining me. Let's head overseas now, and according to the UK Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, a very simple instruction. You must stay at home. Boris Johnson has announced further strict curbs on the movement of people, as Barbara Miller reports.
A simple instruction with wide-ranging consequences. Sitting at a desk in No. 10 Downing Street, the Union Jack behind him, the British Prime Minister announced the country was locking down. It's 66 million people only to be allowed out of their homes for these reasons.
Shopping for basic necessities as infrequently as possible. One form of exercise a day, for example, a run, walk or cycle, alone or with members of your household. Any medical need to provide care or to help a vulnerable person, and travelling to and from work, but only where this is absolutely necessary and cannot be done from home. That's all.
Clothes and electronics shops will be closed, as will playgrounds. Gatherings of more than two people not living in the same household banned. 335 people have now died in the UK because of coronavirus. There are more than 6,500 cases. Central London is unusually quiet, but not quite enough. Scenes of people crowding the capital's parks at the weekend are partly behind the move to impose stricter conditions. Text messages are being sent out to inform people.
Hello?
Hello. This one received by a certain Margaret Miller, definitely a relative.
Right. COVID-19. It says, latest guidance about COVID-19 from NHS Scotland and the Scottish Government. And then there's a whole lot of paragraphs. General advice, what you should do if you or anyone in your household, blah, blah. And you can tick on that, click on that. Next paragraph.
The British Prime Minister says there will be consequences for anyone who disregards the new rules.
If you don't follow the rules, the police will have the powers to enforce them.
But Sir Peter Fahey, a former chief constable of Greater Manchester Police, says police will struggle to enforce the lockdown conditions.
We have about, for instance, half the number of police compared to Italy and their population. We don't have things like identity cards. There's never been this sort of relationship between the police and the public. Police will not have the time to go through lengthy explanations to work out whether it's the first or the second time that somebody's been out that day, whether they really are on the way to Sainsbury's or not. The only way these are going to work is through public acceptance and public compliance.
New Zealand on Monday also announced a strict lockdown with very similar conditions to the UK's. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.
In short, we are all now preparing as a nation to go into self-isolation.
New Zealand's lockdown comes into effect from midnight tomorrow, meaning there's a run on supermarkets and some gun stores today.
Barbara Miller. South Africa's president has announced a three-week lockdown starting on Thursday to contain the virus. All South Africans are being ordered to stay at home unless they're getting food and medical supplies. And public health experts are warning the country could be facing an outbreak as catastrophic as Italy, except the victims will be young. Sally Sara has this report.
The COVID-19 pandemic is starting to hit Africa. The South African government has already declared it a national disaster. Professor Moser Moshabela is Dean of Public Health at the University of KwaZulu-Natal.
We expect to see something similar to Italy. We expect that it will happen to those people who are between ages 20 and 60.
South Africa has a comparatively young population, but a much higher burden of other diseases. More than 7.7 million South Africans are HIV positive. Many are also infected with tuberculosis.
So even though generally we've got a younger population compared to, say, Italy, we still expect that our burden of severe disease is going to be high because of HIV and TB.
It's estimated that South Africa only has a quarter of the 10,000 intensive care beds it will need to cope with COVID-19. Professor Moser Moshabela says there are also not enough ventilators, specialist staff or protective equipment.
It's clear to us with the modelling work we have done that our health system is not going to be able to absorb the potential number of patients with severe disease needing hospitalisation.
Surrounding countries are expected to be struck even harder. The health system in neighbouring Zimbabwe has few resources. The capital, Harare, is home to more than 1.5 million people, but local doctors say the city's central hospital has only 4 functional ICU beds. Back in South Africa, residents in poverty-stricken black townships are bracing for the pandemic. Linda Twala is a community leader and funeral director in the township of Alexandra in Johannesburg. He buried hundreds of victims of the AIDS epidemic in the early 2000s. He fears coronavirus will strike the most vulnerable residents.
Now we are talking about the poor of the poorest, people who can't afford even to buy that sanitizer, people are living in shacks, and most of these people haven't got water.
Linda Twala is waiting for COVID-19 to hit, fearful that he too may become infected as he takes care of the sick, disabled and impoverished in Alexandra Township.
If a person is disabled and he comes to you asking for food, what do you do then?
Linda Twala, a community leader in the township of Alexandria in Johannesburg. That report from Sally Sara. We're back home now, and there are indications that the criteria for coronavirus testing are set to change in Australia to test more people who start showing symptoms without having been in contact with anyone from overseas. It comes as the New South Wales Premier warns the state is at a critical stage in its attempts to stop an exponential increase in cases. Isabel Rowe has been following the story. She joins me with the latest now. Firstly, Isabel, some pretty late-breaking news here from the Federal Health Minister, Greg Hunt. He has announced some new measures. What do we know?
Yeah, so he's just talked about the testing rates and some new tests that arrive. So he says that 1.2% of tests in Australia that have been done are positive. So that's the lowest rate of positive testing that he knows of at the moment. So he says that's good news and that Australia's testing rates are higher than many other countries, including South Korea, which is one of the countries that is doing well there, according to the health minister. He's announced another 63,000 tests have arrived in Australia today. He's also ordering 1.5 million point of care tests, which are for health workers to make sure that they stay clear of coronavirus. He's also talked about some new masks arriving. This is the Health Minister Greg Hunt speaking a short time ago.
There is mask production being developed in Australia, and I mentioned previously that we were expecting 54 million masks by the end of April. I'm now advised that in fact 30 million of those will be in the country within the next 2 weeks, ahead of schedule, which I think is important. We will count them when we've got them.
The Health Minister Greg Hunt, Isabel Rose with me. Isabel, we're seeing a jump in cases. That's especially in New South Wales. What's happening?
Yes, so Gladys Berejiklian says this is a really crucial time in the fight against coronavirus. She wants people to take seriously the pleas to stay at home wherever possible and says she will enforce harsh penalties for not doing that. The announcement this morning was that there are 149 new infections in 24 hours. That's pushed the state's total past 800. And of those, 425 are overseas acquired, but the rest are either acquired through a known infection or they're unknown, which is what experts are increasingly worried about.
And given the increase in cases involving people who aren't necessarily coming from overseas, I understand that the government's set to change the rules, is that right, of who can get tested?
That is the intention. So last night on the ABC's Q&A program, Deputy Chief Medical Officer Paul Kelly revealed that they are going to change the criteria to move away from people who've returned from overseas. Obviously, the border restrictions mean that there are very few of those people now, so there'll be more of a community focus for people who start showing symptoms. I spoke a short time ago to University of New South Wales immunologist, Emeritus Professor John Dwyer, and he's been calling for this, and I spoke to him a short time ago.
Absolutely. I mean, at the moment, we're looking sort of at the tip of an iceberg, and we're really worried about the depth under the water. And if you watch any of the broadcasts from the head of the WHO, what message they're putting out to the world, inevitably he starts off by saying, test more, test more, test more. And there's much more that we should be doing with our testing if we weren't rationing it. At the moment, we have had such a shortage of testing capacity that we've had these rules in that limited the indications for getting the test. The more we can broaden those, the better.
Immunologist Emeritus Professor John Dwyer speaking there to Isabel Rowe. Well, evidence has emerged showing that losing your sense of smell and taste might be a symptom of coronavirus. Ear, nose and throat specialists abroad say patients may be otherwise asymptomatic but could lose these senses because of the way the virus is residing in their bodies. Specialists here say that information could present an advantage to Australia in its fight against COVID-19, as Rachel Mealy reports.
People around the world have been telling their doctors that they've suddenly lost their sense of smell. This YouTuber named Jorge is among them.
I just want to tell you that for the last couple of days, I just haven't had any sense of smell.
Professor Simon Carney is an ear, nose and throat specialist from Flinders University in Adelaide.
The three cardinal symptoms we've been told to recognise are obviously fever, cough and runny nose. But as experience from ENT surgeons around the world has increased, we're being increasingly aware that there are a lot of patients that don't fit those three cardinal symptoms. Now, that doesn't mean they're not important and doesn't mean that they're not the three critical ones, but there seem to be a subgroup of patients, and especially in young adults, who may present with the loss of smell without those other cardinal symptoms.
Professor Carney says the lack of smell or taste may be a person's only symptoms and they could otherwise feel very well. He says it's important to spread the message.
I think everyone just needs to be aware of that, because a sudden onset of a loss of smell in a young person is actually extremely uncommon. And so if that's happening, people just need to think, well, maybe I don't have a cough, maybe I don't have a fever, but maybe I need to get some medical advice. And I think that's the message we're trying to get across.
Professor Carney says it's difficult to gauge how many of the positive COVID-19 patients in Australia have reported the loss of taste and smell as a symptom.
And it does seem to be different across countries. In South Korea, it's about a third presented with loss of smell as their first symptom. That doesn't mean the only symptom, it means the first symptom. But in Germany, which of course is one of the countries with the more recent bulges in prevalence, it seems to be two-thirds of patients presenting with loss of smell as their first symptom.
He says he and his colleagues have contacted chief medical officers in Australian states and territories to pass on the latest data, which may be used to update the testing criteria. Professor Peter White is a virologist at the University of New South Wales. He says we're hearing more and more about asymptomatic patients, but he says there could be very subtle signs to pay attention to.
Well, there's a spectrum of symptoms, and asymptomatic is a very subjective term. Asymptomatic means that you don't feel unwell, you're not coughing, but in those patients, there may be tiny symptoms. The virus is still replicating. And even if they're just talking in the vicinity of people, they will be able to spread the virus.
Professor Peter White from the University of New South Wales, that report from Rachel Mealy. Educators are warning Australia's digital divide is a chasm between the haves and have-nots. And that'll be exposed like never before as schools move to remote learning. And national education reporter Connor Duffy has been taking a look.
In Melbourne's northeastern suburbs, David Robinson is wondering how he'll educate his 8 and 12-year-old daughters.
I don't have internet at home. I've never been able to afford it. I choose to use the internet at the local libraries and rather than spend money that I can't afford having internet here at home.
But the 49-year-old's local library is now closed, meaning his daughters will have to share one smartphone and one laptop.
My daughter can use, can connect to my data on my phone and download that way. But if they're talking about video learning with teachers and them having to spend hours talking to teachers, there's no way that she's going to be able to do that.
As coronavirus infections surge, education departments have been racing to move teaching online. But David Robinson worries the list of parents who can't afford the internet will only grow.
There's going to be parents that have been able to afford internet up to now that may have to cut it off because they've lost their jobs or whatever. There's going to be a lot of other people that are going to suddenly find that they can't afford, internet's not a priority for them because they have to keep a roof over their head or keep food in their mouths.
The Executive Director of the New South Wales Public Education Foundation, David Hetherington, agrees.
So we're really concerned as the coronavirus epidemic unfolds and we move to a remote learning model, that there may be some kids who are left behind in terms of digital learning.
And that means the digital divide will widen. Each year, the foundation hands out over 400 scholarships of $1,500 to $2,000, with digital devices high on shopping lists. With as many as 1,200 applicants, hundreds more are turned away. David Hetherington also warns it's not just the educational tools of the future, but those of the past that can be missing too.
There are a number of people living in relatively small spaces and often siblings sharing room. So just the ability to set up a desk, a learning area with a decent chair is something that some of our scholars really find it hard to achieve.
While the scale of this educational disruption will undoubtedly be enormous, education departments around the country are working hard to adjust and will be delivering some course materials by mail.
Connor Duffy, that's all for today. Just remember, please wash your hands, keep your distance from people if you can. Please just stay at home. I'm Thomas Arete. We'll keep you up to date. Thanks very much for your company.
Hi, I'm Stephen Stockwell.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal.
All over Australia, people have been queuing for hours outside Centrelink offices. The website's strained to the point of collapse, and the phone lines even busier than usual.
The government's been ramping up capacity to deal with the unprecedented influx of the newly unemployed. But it hasn't been enough. Today we hear from the people trying desperately to reach the front of that queue.
Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.